Kunjabi Hari Adha Madhava Kunjabi Hari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunjabi Hari Kunjabi Hari Gopi Janava Lava Girvare Dari 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 Yashoda Nandana Vajjana Yashoda Nandana Vajjana Ranjana Yamunati Ravanachari Ravanachari Yamunati Ravanachari Ravanachari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunjabi Hari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunjabi Hari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunjabi Hari Radha Madhava Kunjabi Hari Gopi Janava Lava Girvare Dari Gopi Janava Lava Girvare Dari Gopi Janava Lava Girvare Dari Girvare Dari Yashoda Nandana Vrajajana Ranjana Yashoda Nandana Vrajajana Ranjana Yashoda Nandana Vrajajana Ranjana Yamunati Ravanachari Ravanachari Yamunati Ravanachari Ravanachari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunjabi Hari Radha Madhava Kunjabi Hari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunjabi Hari Radha Madhava Kunjabi Hari
Jai Om Vishnupada Paramahamsa Paribrajakacharya Astatera Sata Shri Srimad His Divine Grace A.C. Bhakti Vedanta Swami Maharaj Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai Jai Om Vishnupada Paramahamsa Paribrajakacharya Astatera Sata Shri Srimad Srila Bhakti Saranta Saraswati Thakura Maharaj Ki Jai Anantakota Vaishnav Vrinda Ki Jai Namacharya Thakur Haridas Ki Jai Prem Shigaho, Sri Krishna Titania Prabhu Nityananda, Sri Advaita Gadadhar Sivasari Gaur Bhakta Vrindagi Jai, Sri Sri Radha Krishna Gokopinath Shamakund Radhakund Gira Govardhan Gijai, Sri Vrindavan Dham Gijai, Dorka Dham Gijai, Mayapur Dham Gijai, Bhakti Devi Gijai, Tulsi Devi Gijai, Jamuna Maya Gijai, Ganga Maya Gijai, Sri Harinam Sankirtan Gijai, Brihat Madonga Gijai, Iskan Founder Acharya His Divine Grace A.C. Bhakti Vedanta Swami Maharaj Srila Prabhupada Gijai, Gaur Premanadi Hari Hari Om. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories, all glories to Sri Guru and Sri Gauranga. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. You're reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 10, Chapter 33, Text 8. Ucher Jagur Nityamana Rakta Kantyo Rati Priyaha Krishna Bimarsha Mudita Yad Gitenedam Avritam Ucher jagur nritatya, excuse me. Ucher jagur nrityamana. Rakta kancho rati priyaha. Krishna bimarshamudita. Yad giten edam avritam. Ucher jagur nritatya, ucher jagur nrityamana, rakta kancho rati priyaha, Krishna bimarshamudita, yadgiten edam avritam. Next, please. Jagur Nijamana Rakta kancho rati priya Krishna bimarsha mudita Yadgitene dam avritam
Ucche
jagur nityamana
Rakta kancho rati priya
Krishna bimarsha mudita Yadgitenedamavritam. Matajis. Jagu, they sang Nityamana while dancing. Rakta, colored. Kanja, their throats. Rati, conjugal enjoyment. Priya, dedicated to. Krishna Abhimarsha, by the touch of Lord Krishna. Mudita, joyful. Yat, whose? Gitena, by the singing. Idam, this entire universe. Avritam, is pervaded. Translation and purport by the servants of His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhakti Vedanta Swami Maharaj Srila Prabhupada. Eager to enjoy conjugal love, their throats colored with various pigments, the gopis sang loudly and danced. They were overjoyed by Krishna's touch, and they sang songs that filled the entire universe. Please repeat. Eager to enjoy conjugal love, their throats colored with various pigments, the gopis sang loudly and danced. They were overjoyed by Krishna's touch, and they sang songs that filled the entire universe. Purport. According to an authoritative book on music called Sangita Sara, Tavanta eva raga surya vacho jiva jaitaya teshu sudasa saha shri pura gopi kritavara. There are as many musical ragas as there are species of life. Among these ragas are 16,000 principal ones, which were manifested by the gopis. Thus, the gopis created 16,000 different ragas, or musical modes, and these have subsequently been disseminated throughout the world. The words Yad Gitanedam Avritam also indicate that even today, devotees throughout the world sing the praises of Krishna following the example of the gopis. Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prashtaya Bhutale Srimati Bhakti Vedanta Swamanite Namane Namaste Sarasvati Devi Gauravani Pacharane Nirvashesha Shunyavadi Pashtacha Deshatarane Omagana Timarandasha Jananjanan Shalakaya Chakshurum Militam Jaina Tasmai Shri Guruve Namaha Mukham Karoti Vachalam Pangam Langayate Girim Yatkripatamaham Bande Shigurum Dinataranam. So this is a very sacred verse. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur sometimes would comment upon the Rasa Leela, and he would say we should take this pastime and hold it above our head and worship it. And be very careful, because it's something extremely, extremely sacred. And I would like to pray to all of you. Srila Prabhupada, he described once in a purport in Chaitanya Charitamrita that Krishna is very pleased when he sees the devotees assemble together to hear and chant his glories. And Prabhupada commented, even sometimes the devotees don't have realization. They don't have realization. But Prabhupada said, because the devotees are somehow eager to try to serve Krishna, he says, Prabhupada said that Krishna will give them the realization. So although I'm unqualified, and because you are very eager, sincere devotees, I'm praying that Krishna may somehow put some words in my mouth that may help you understand this transcendental subject matter. So I would like to attempt to say some things that Srila Prabhupada said about Sarup Siddhi, attaining one's constitutional position, and why that's important. Why that's important to understand Krishna's Rasa Leela and this principle of Sarup Siddhi. And at the same time, why it's something very confidential and has to be handled very, very carefully. And I'd also like to discuss how through the principle of Guru Tattva, we can come to understand Rasa Tattva. So, first of all, it's very interesting, in 1971, in the courtyard of Radha Damodar Temple beside Sri Rupa Goswami's Samadhi, Prabhupada gave many lectures on Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, and there's recordings of these. You can hear them. They're very, very wonderful. And the first recording is very interesting. And in the beginning of that recording, within the first few minutes, Prabhupada starts talking about our constitutional position. And he said, all of us, every one of us, have a very unique constitutional position and relationship with Krishna. He says, all very unique. And he said, that is known as our Sarup Siddhi. And Srila Prabhupada said, how that is developed, Prabhupada gave, sometimes he could explain the most complex things in the most simple, precise, succinct manner. So Srila Prabhupada said, this principle of understanding your constitutional position, he said it's something like sex desire. He said everyone has sex desire. He said the young boy and the young girl, he said when they become mature in age, he said sex desire manifests. No one has to teach them that. It doesn't have to be taught. It's something that when you become mature. So Prabhupada's indicating in the same way this understanding of this Sarup Siddhi, our constitutional position, it will come when we mature in devotional service. And Srila Prabhupada was elaborating there how, just like the woman, she gets married and she wants to have a baby. And a baby just doesn't come instantly. She has to become pregnant, and then the embryo develops in the womb after some time, and then eventually she gives birth. So Prabhupada was again indicating that this is not something you can rush to. You cannot artificially try to come to this position of understanding your eternal constitutional position. It's something that's revealed in time through maturity in devotional service. And there also Prabhupada is describing the importance of properly executing the process of devotional service. And he's also describing the importance of being determined in devotional service and executing the order of the spiritual master and how our business is to preach. And many times Prabhupada would say that in our quest for spiritual advancement, sometimes he would say we should not be concerned even with going back to Godhead. We should be concerned with executing the order of the spiritual master. And Srila Prabhupada actually commented in one purport that executing the order of the spiritual master is tantamount. It is non-different than seeing Krishna face to face. And he said how one can meet Krishna in the order of the spiritual master. So by following the order of the spiritual master, one will meet Krishna face to face. And there also in those lectures, Srila Prabhupada, he was talking about the importance of chanting the holy name, of chanting japa, especially in the holy dawn. Srila Prabhupada was saying that the holy name of Krishna is so sacred, something so sacred, so invaluable, that Krishna has given that to you. He's put that in all of our hands. And Srila Prabhupada was saying you should be extremely careful to chant this holy name attentively with devotion. He said, especially within the sacred dham. He said it's very important to chant the holy name with attention and devotion. Speak closer? Okay. Closer, okay. Thank you. Is that better?
Yes.
Okay. So, if we study Srila Rupa Goswami's Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, it begins with the process of devotional service. And the potency of the process of devotional service. And the importance of avoiding the offenses against the holy name and the offenses in deity worship. That is extremely important part of the process of Vaidhi Bhakti. And again, in those lectures, Prabhupada is saying how first Vaidhi Bhakti and Raghunuga Bhakti will manifest automatically in time. And at one time, Srila Prabhupada, he was given a report that in one of our temples, there was a group of about 40 devotees. This is just after some of the Chaitanya Charitamritas had been published. And within these volumes, there's some very intimate pastimes of Krishna being described. And so Prabhupada heard a report that some devotees, they weren't reading the rest of his books, but they were just having some meetings together discussing these verses about Krishna's pastimes in Chaitanya Charitamrita, in Nectar Devotion. And Prabhupada's response was, they should be careful, there are enough monkeys in Vrindavan. That was quite a stern warning. And these devotees actually had a meeting with Srila Prabhupada to try and They were trying to defend their position, and they were explaining to Srila Prabhupada, "Well, Srila Prabhupada, these verses are in your books, and so we should discuss them." And Prabhupada said, he said, "It's just like you have a pharmacy, and there's many, many medicines in the pharmacy. But it's not that you go in the pharmacy and you just take any medicine. Some of those medicines, if you don't take them properly, could be fatal, could cause you some severe reactions." So Prabhupada said, there is a prescription of Rasa Leela, but he said, for us, the prescription is Kurukshetra Leela. He said, that is our prescription. It's very important to understand the fundamental principles of devotional service and how to apply those principles in our life to root out all the material contaminations and eventually come to the platform of pure goodness. Pure goodness. But Srila Prabhupada describes in the Bhagavad Gita, 14th chapter, how Krishna's nature is pure goodness, and to attain Krishna, we have to come to that platform of pure goodness, Shuddha-sattva. And that's not a cheap thing. That's not a cheap thing. At the same time, in one purport, Srila Prabhupada commented that even the neophyte devotee who engages in devotional service, he is understood to be on the Brahma-Bhuta platform. So the Brahma-Bhuta platform means beyond the modes of material nature. So we might think from that verse, well, if I'm engaged in devotional service, I'm beyond the modes of material nature, therefore I'm qualified to enter into Rasa Leela pastimes. But that verse Prabhupada quoting Brahma Bhuta, Mam Chayo Vyabhacharina Bhakti Yogena Sevate, when one engages in full devotional service, and there's no deviation from that full devotional service, even for a moment. So one is fully, completely, and wholly, and totally situated, not just in goodness, but in pure goodness. And I don't know about for you, but even for myself, I experience, especially when chanting japa, how difficult it is to become free from the modes of material nature. Even in the holy dham, sometimes you're chanting, you're falling asleep. So is that one of the modes of material nature? Probably ignorance. And sometimes we're chanting and my mind's thinking, what am I going to do today? And all these plans. And is that really chanting with attention? It's probably passion. And sometimes we get those moments of clarity where we actually begin to focus on the holy name. We begin to get that inkling of the taste. And that's what we want to strive for. Vishnujan Swami, many years ago, always stuck in my mind. He read one translation of one Bhaktivinoda Bhajan, and the translation was, when will a day be mine? Offenses ceasing, taste for the name increasing, when in my heart will your mercy shine? We have to pray like that to become free from these modes of material nature, to be able to enter into goodness, to begin to become qualified, to understand the nature of these pastimes. So there, in the Bhagavatam, and Prabhupada said you shouldn't miss one word of the Bhagavatam. So it's important that we read that. We cannot enter into it, but we can read it, and we can appreciate how the gopis in Vrindavan had complete and total unmotivated, unselfish love for Krishna. Their only desire was to serve Krishna. They cared nothing for their own pleasure. Complete selfless love. Absolutely pure. At least we can go away with that understanding and hold the Bhagavatam on our head, and maybe some of that dust will fall in, penetrate our consciousness. Extremely important. So how do we come to that platform? And as I mentioned, how Srila Prabhupada said that one can see Krishna through the order of the spiritual master. Prabhupada said that's tantamount to seeing Krishna face to face. How many of you here have been to Uttaldanga Junction? Anybody here? Okay, if you haven't been here, go. I'm telling you, go. It'll change your life. That is where Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur gave his first instruction to Srila Prabhupada on his very first meeting. You're an intelligent man, educated in the English language. You should preach the message of Lord Chaitanya in the English language all over the world. And Prabhupada said at that meeting, he accepted Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur as his guru, and he said he always meditated upon that. Even in his household life, he was meditating. How can I do that? Srila Prabhupada, he thought of that. I'm telling you, you have to go see this Uttal Danga. It's been restored. Practically falling apart. It was practically like a disaster area. And there was some business magnate who purchased it, and he wanted to tear the whole thing down and make it into a high-rise apartment. And somehow the devotees realized the importance. We have to claim this property somehow. So there was a great... If you go there, the devotees there will tell you all the intrigues that went on to get the title to the property. Interesting side note. The person that purchased that property and did not want to sell it, his name was Shishupal. Shishupal. But somehow by Krishna magic, the devotees got the deed to that property. So Srila Prabhupada, he took that instruction, and he always thought of fulfilling the order of his guru. So what does that mean, fulfilling the order of the guru? And I had an experience in 1977. I was here when Srila Prabhupada departed the planet. I was here for the installation of Prabhupada in the Samadhi here, for the installation of the Pushpa Samadhi in Mayapur in 1977. Extremely impactful time in my life. And at that time, every single class was just Prabhupada Gita. You were here. Every class was just about Prabhupada. And everyone was so absorbed in Srila Prabhupada. So I went back to Canada. The first day I'm back in the temple, I walk in the temple room, and there's a gentleman sitting on the floor in the prasad room. So I just naturally thought, I'll sit down by this man and tell him about Srila Prabhupada. So I sit down, I start to tell him about Srila Prabhupada, and he said, oh, I met Srila Prabhupada. I said, really? Well, tell me. And so he explained to me how in 1966 he worked on the subway in New York, and frequently he would get off the train on his lunch hour and take his lunch in a park, Tompkins Square Park. And he said he would see this Swami, and he said it was very unusual. He said he would hear this Swami speak, and he said it appeared that when he was speaking, the birds would land in the tree and listen. He said, I swear, it appeared that the birds were listening to Swami. And this man, over time, on many occasions, he would be in that park, and sometimes he would sit and talk with Srila Prabhupada. And so he shared some things with me about what Prabhupada had told him. And he told me one day how Srila Prabhupada had preached to him. And so this man, he actually hadn't seen a devotee or a temple or Prabhupada's books for like between 1967 and 1977, completely forgotten about everything about Krishna consciousness. He started explaining to me how Prabhupada was explaining the process of creation. How in one corner of the cosmic manifestation, Karnadakshay Vishnu lies down in the causal ocean, innumerable universes are emanating, and in each universe there's these bubbles with Garbhadakshay Vishnu. He was going into this immense detail, and the man started crying and said, I can't believe I remember all these things after all these years. And so he told me that he had great respect for Srila Prabhupada. He actually thought about becoming a disciple. He was actually very attracted. But he said he's sitting on the bench one day with Srila Prabhupada, and he said Prabhupada pointed out with his finger in the park and said, I have temples and printing presses and farms and disciples all over the world. And this man, Ruben, he said he respected Prabhupada, but he knew Prabhupada just had this little tiny center, 26 Second Avenue, a few hippie followers. He told me he didn't know what to think. And he said, Prabhupada, with his finger pointed, said, we simply have to move through time and have faith in Krishna. Move through time and have faith in Krishna. So somehow this man, after 10 years, he ended up in Vancouver, Canada, ended up and went to Prabhupada's temples, and he saw what Prabhupada said became manifest. He was so amazed. And he was actually, we arranged to have him interviewed for the Prabhupada Lilamrita. But from that we can see that Prabhupada, he just didn't have a plan, but Prabhupada had a vision in the sense he understood the future. He understood things in a way that it's impossible for us to comprehend. Prabhupada saw there would be temples and printing presses all over the world. How can we understand that? So my question is, we're sitting in the Krishna Balar Mandir, but are we just sitting in the Krishna Balar Mandir? Are we also sitting within Srila Prabhupada's vision? We're also sitting within Srila Prabhupada's vision here. And that's a very powerful thing, that we are actually a part of Srila Prabhupada's vision. And every one of us here has a very, just like Prabhupada said, everyone has a very unique relationship with Krishna. And all of us who are followers of Srila Prabhupada's mission, whether you're disciples, grand disciples, great-grand disciples, you also have very unique and special relationships with Srila Prabhupada. And sometimes that's in ways you cannot imagine. I actually wanted to share something about my godbrother, Dhritarashtra Prabhu, who just passed away recently in Vrindavan. He had a very unusual name, Dhritarashtra. And I always thought, well, that's kind of an odd name for a devotee, Dhritarashtra, because Dhritarashtra is a bit of a nefarious character. But I never wanted to ask him that question. Anyway, 5-6 years ago, somehow he told me the story how he became a devotee. And so he was a hippie who was living on the beaches in California. And he had heard about there was some Swami who was in Los Angeles. And so that registered in his mind. And then sometimes later he saw a poster that A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami is going to be giving a lecture on Watsik Avenue Temple, Los Angeles. And he just saw the poster, and then he went to sleep on a beach that night. And he told me he just woke up wide awake in the middle of the night after having a dream about Prabhupada. And he said he just jumped up and he realized, I have to go see this man. So he just started running like a madman to get to a bus station, somehow get to Los Angeles. He found his way to the temple and he heard Srila Prabhupada speak. And he told me when he heard Srila Prabhupada speak, Dreet, as he was affectionately called, told me, he said he realized, my life is a mess, and I'm crazy. He said, I'm just literally crazy. And then after the program, he went out to Los Angeles. He didn't go back to the temple. And he ended up in a house with some hippies. And one of the hippies gave him this book and said, well, someone gave me this book, but I cannot understand it. You should read it. Srimad Bhagavatam's second canto. So Dhritarashtra starts reading this Bhagavatam. He comes to the pastime of Dhritarashtra, Vidura, preaching to Dhritarashtra to quit home and go to the forest. He was moved by that. And then he read about the Pandavas retiring timely and going north. And Dhritarashtra told me, he said, that's it. That's what I have to do. I have to go north. So he told me, he grabbed his backpack, got out on the highway, and started hitchhiking north. He ended up in Canada, ended up in the Vancouver temple, and after some time he got initiation, and Srila Prabhupada gave him the name Dhritarashtra. So how did Prabhupada know that? Prabhupada had a very intimate understanding of all his followers and disciples in ways that we cannot imagine. So we all have this great meaningful and deep connection with Srila Prabhupada. And it's something we very much want to cherish and appreciate. Sometimes when my wife and I travel, people tell us, oh, second generation devotees and newer devotees say, we see Prabhupada through you. And I usually tell them, we see Srila Prabhupada through the things that you are doing. We were just in Bangalore earlier,
January, and I didn't know there was three ISKCON temples there. No idea. Amazing projects. That was so inspiring. You see, that's Krishna magic. That was like Prabhupada inspiring these devotees. In Calcutta, somehow the devotees got 25 acres of land on the edge of the city. It's impossible to get that amount of land. Somehow they got 25 acres, and part of it's in the city, part of it's out of the city, because part of it's out of the city, they can have a goshal there. It's like Krishna magic. It's Krishna magic. It's, you see, Prabhupada manifest these things. Even the boat festival here, it was such a glorious, wonderful festival. And being a Hepajari and understanding what goes on behind the scenes and organizing festivals in terms of the pujaris and the management, it's like a tremendous amount of organization that goes on. And then you see such a wonderful experience all the devotees had. That's the Krishna magic. Shama Sundar and Jamuna and Malati would always talk about this Krishna magic. Krishna magic is here. It's here. And if we can somehow try to understand ourselves, what small thing, even one small thing I can do to help Srila Prabhupada's mission. Prabhupada commented that by the order of the spiritual master, one can accomplish more than one can by his own ability. So because this is not just a mundane movement, because this is a part of Prabhupada's vision, if we can place ourselves in that vision and find some service we can render towards that mission, that Krishna magic can happen for all of us. And so that Krishna magic, we can see how Krishna is actually manifesting his mercy in the activities of the devotees. It's something very, very powerful. And another thing I want to touch on in terms of the possibility remotely of one day being able to understand the intricacies of Krishna's pastimes, or even entering into Krishna's pastimes. Something. If you ever have the opportunity to listen to the Krishna book dictation tapes, they're actually quite amazing. In some of those recordings, Srila Prabhupada's discussing Krishna and Balaram fighting with the demons. And it doesn't just sound like Prabhupada's dictating, it actually sounds like Srila Prabhupada is a news reporter seeing that event take place. And Prabhupada's voice is so excited and lively, and you realize, oh, Prabhupada is there. He's actually seeing that. It's such a powerful thing. So that's something very remote from us. But again, we should understand that that is the long-term goal, to become purified, to understand that. And again, it's by the process of devotional service. And a very important part of that process, from my experience in working with many devotees, is Rupa Goswami's six loving exchanges, which are to reveal your mind in confidence and hear in confidence, to accept prasadam and give prasadam, and to give gifts and accept gifts. The very important, very powerful spiritual processes. Everyone here, we probably take prasadam at least 1,000 times a year. We're nourished by that, enlivened by that. That sustains us. It's a very powerful spiritual process. And giving gifts and accepting gifts, we all do that sometime. And giving gifts sometimes can even just mean expressing appreciation. Appreciation to the pujaris and the managers and the devotee in the shoe room there who's been looking after the Vaishnava's shoes for over 20 years. You can express some appreciation to them. And it's not that they need aggrandizement, but devotees are nourished by that. It's very nourishing for devotees. We had one god sister who she did a service of running a Sunday school for 2 years. And after 2 years, she came and said, I can't continue this anymore. And so we asked, well, what's the challenge? What's the difficulty? And she said, I did this for 2 years, and not one parent ever came and said, well, thank you for looking after my kids. So after all that time, she just felt, well, maybe no one appreciates this, so why bother doing it? So expressing appreciation, it's a very important gift we can give to everyone. It's actually very empowering and very encouraging. And then these two recommendations are revealing your mind in confidence and hearing in confidence. Those are the two exchanges we probably do the least. You could ask yourself, how many times in the last year have I really, in a close, heartfelt way, revealed my mind and heart to someone? Or in the last month? Or in the last week? How often do we do that? It's a very important recommendation by Srila Rupa Goswami. Srila Prabhupada, he defined it once as, he said, Prabhupada said, if I'm having some difficulty, I go to some friend in confidence and I reveal my mind that I'm having this difficulty. And just by doing that, expressing your challenges, your hopes, your aspirations, your goals, you don't feel alone. You don't feel alone. And you feel relieved that you're able to express that to somebody. It becomes very empowering. And especially ladies don't have such a hard time doing this. They have a more empathic nature. They tend to, emotional intelligence. They have a better emotional vocabulary. Modern linguists in the study of language have discovered that the usage, number of words used to express emotions in English language especially, has diminished over the last 100 years. We have less and less of a vocabulary for expressing emotions. So much so now that in many so-called modernized countries, especially among young people, when they express emotions, if something is very good, they'll say, oh, that's wicked. That's wicked. That's a killer or something like that. Well, such a strange way to use the English language. So why is it important to express emotions properly, to identify emotions? Because when you understand what you're feeling, especially when you can verbalize it and have someone understand you, you do feel that relief. I don't feel alone and someone understands me. And it's like a weight off your shoulder. And prior to COVID, there was another, it was called an international health crisis. And it wasn't a pandemic. The disease, they said, was something called toxic masculinity. And that's a tendency which has arisen in the last 100, 150 years for men to bury their emotions, not to express their emotions. You know, men are taught, boys don't cry, be tough, just suck it up. And so why they declared this as a world health crisis, because they were finding men had a higher rate of heart disease, a higher rate of diabetes, many serious diseases. There was a study in Canada, over a period of 10 years, the male suicide rate went up 4 times, and it was 4 times higher than females. And they were trying to understand why. Why is this happening? And they concluded it was because most men, they bury their emotions, they don't have a way to express it, to share it, rather than being something they can process and feel not alone and relieved. They bottle it up, and some men bottle it up so much to the point that they actually end up committing suicide because they can't cope with that inner struggle. So that is something extremely important, to understand and be able to identify and express our emotions. Especially if we look at that in terms of this topic of, if you want to say the sacred word, rasa tattva, how will we ever be able to understand these subtle, most intimate emotional exchanges between Krishna as devotees and Krishna and the gopis if we can't even process and understand our own emotions? Just like Bhakti Vijnana Maharaj, he was saying that how Krishna, one time he was just like pulling on both ends of his chadar. And it had a hidden meaning. The meaning was, I'm defeated. I'm defeated. I'm defeated. Such a subtle thing. Such a subtle thing. But devotees who have that kind of spiritual vision and spiritual understanding, they can understand these small exchanges are extremely meaningful. 30 years ago, one of my god brothers, he was invited to attend a Kathakali dance. And if you've ever seen Kathakali dance, they wear these really colorful costumes, very bright makeup, and they have kind of a white collar around their neck. And I always wonder, well, what's the white collar for? And the reason they have this white collar is because generally, traditionally, those dramas would be performed, they would be 8-hour performances, which would go on into the night, and it would be lit by lamps. And so those collars would reflect the light onto their faces so the audience could see the subtle emotional expressions that the performers were doing in his dramas. And my godbrother said he couldn't pick up on anything. And then eventually some Indian gentleman was kind of letting him know what was going on. But he said during the performance, the audience was going, oh, ah, ooh. They were picking up all these subtleties. So within Krishna's pastimes, there's so many very subtle, powerful exchanges of love and devotion and emotion. And again, we can't jump that understanding, but by that process of serving the Guru, understanding we're part of his mission, rendering that seva, associating with devotees, and especially trying to find at least one person in your life you can express your inner thoughts and feelings and hopes and struggles. Because by doing that, it helps. There's a term called emotional intelligence. Emotional intelligence. And that is actually required for spiritual life. And we see how Srila Prabhupada, he was so expert at reciprocating with devotees. He could understand them so minutely. He could understand exactly what they needed. He understood when to be harsh. He understood when to be very gentle and encouraging. He could read people's emotions and needs so carefully. And even devotees who were even in the same room with Srila Prabhupada, you felt that Srila Prabhupada fully understood you. The Prabhupada fully understood you and he cared about you. You understood that just by being in his presence, Prabhupada had empathy on a level that we cannot even comprehend. Just by being in his presence, you could feel that Prabhupada cared about you and understood you. So this is a very unique part of the Bhagavatam. Again, something that has to be understood with great respect and reverence. And understanding that our ultimate goal is actually to go back to home, back to Godhead, to enter into Krishna's pastimes. And in one sense, Krishna can bestow love of God upon anyone. Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, just chanting through the forest of Jarikanda, the animals were developing love of God. Whoever he met was developing love of God. So we can also be blessed in that way with love of God. Prabhupada, he cautioned once though, you may get that blessing of love of God by the mercy of Krishna, by the mercy of Guru. And he said, that's a bit like if you go to a university, sometimes they will give someone an honorary degree. Some big politician, they take him to the big university, he gets an honorary degree in physics or something. So Prabhupada said, Krishna may give you that kind of honorary degree in pure unalloyed bhakti. But he said, don't think that you can sit there and not do the work and expect Krishna to give you that honorary degree. We all need to do that internal work of trying to get rid of our anarthas, trying to come and try to understand how to get more to the mode of goodness in all our activities and how to realize that we are actually all of us are a very important part of Srila Prabhupada's mission. I was just thinking this morning about the, what's the name of the devotee at the The shoe booth. He's been there 20 years.
Radhe Shyam.
It's such an inspiration. Been coming here for so many years. He's there. And he's always blissful. He's there 4 in the morning. He's just singing happily. And he's there 9 o'clock at night. He's just singing happily. He knows everyone's shoes. He knows the relationship between the shoes. It's inspiring. It's so inspiring. This is simple devotee doing some simple service. It's inspiring. And we all can do that in our lives just by embracing Prabhupada's mission and, again, realizing that our connection with Srila Prabhupada is our connection back to home, back to Godhead. So I'd like to end there, and if there's any questions or comments or critiques, Pancha Gota Prabhu.
When Prabhupada was sick and he was going back to India, many devotees were feeling like, oh, what's going to happen now? Maybe Prabhupada could send one of your godbrothers or somebody. There's 4 spiritual divisions, and everyone needs personal association. So if we lose that personal association, we should seek maybe a live person to continue to be, you know, inspired and satisfied. Otherwise, we may not feel complete. Like lament that, oh, I missed the opportunity. So how do we see Prabhupada in connection to being here and guiding us and not go outside of his teachings or his mission of spreading Krishna consciousness?
My personal experience, 1977, we're on the plane coming to India. I'm reading first canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. And I come across the verse, Nasta Prayeshu Abhadrishu Nityam Bhagavata Sevaya Bhagavati Tamashloki Bhaktir Bhavati Naistaki. How by rendering devotional service and rendering service unto the pure devotee, everything inauspicious within the heart becomes destroyed practically to nil. And loving service to the Lord comes into being established as an irrevocable fact. And in that purport, Prabhupada describes there's 3 things. There's Bhagavan, there's the book Bhagavat, which is a book about Bhagavan, and then he says there is the person Bhagavat, who is that personality who leads his life in terms of the book Bhagavat. So I was meditating on that on the way to Vrindavan. We arrived at Vrindavan, had a shower, I went straight to Prabhupada's room, offered my dandavas to Prabhupada. I remember getting up and looking at Prabhupada, and somehow Krishna could let me see that Srila Prabhupada, he was the embodiment of his books, and he was embodied within his books. And for me, that's a conviction you can't tear from my soul. It's for me, it's powerful. So Srila Prabhupada is within his books, and if we read them attentively with devotion, things will come up that are exactly what you need to hear, exactly what you need to try and apply in your life. And that's my experience. That's my story. I'm sticking to it.
Towards the beginning of your lecture, you were speaking about Prabhupada giving the prescriptions in Kurukshetra. 50 years ago, he was saying that. So since that time, now we have many people that think that was 50 years ago. Because later on in the lecture, you were saying the long-term goal was just like Prabhupada, not just reading pastime, but you become part of those pastimes. So these specific leelas that were mentioned early on, the Gopi Baba Club, is this something we don't even think about in this lifetime? Or 50 years later, should we think that, you know, maybe we should be having such classes?
I think we need to be thinking how I can come to the platform of goodness, pure goodness, and how I can purely serve Srila Prabhupada. And as Prabhupada was saying, then those things will manifest naturally. It won't be artificial. It won't be artificial. That's the key. It can't be something artificial.
Prabhupada also, he said one time, there was a similar person that complicated question. He said, you just chant, I chant sincerely, and then everything will be revealed to you. He said, I have everything revealed to me by this process of chanting. So we don't have to rush up there trying to gain fresh. into something so special, precious, and so beyond our capacity at this time. If we do so, we will crash again. There will be damage. And so it is very important to heal this past time with great respect and understanding. We stay simple in this, understanding in way that in due course of time we get access to this by Krishna's grace in his own time.
I remember several years ago at the leadership sangha in Mayapur, there was these big banners with different quotes, and there was one by Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, which was describing the potency of the holy name, and it was saying that how by chanting the holy name, all the intricacies of the philosophy will be revealed by chanting the holy name. And that's why it's so important, a simple thing, to chant and hear. To just chant and hear that holy name and concentrate. Prabhupada was one time, I told him, so Prabhupada, when I chant, my mind, there's such a problem with my mind. And Prabhupada said, there's no question of the mind. He said, just chant and hear. Just chant and hear. Is that easy? No. But we can try with sincerity, and we can pray to Lord Balaram to give us the strength to chant with attention and devotion.
Sometimes we have bad experience with ISKCON management. We say, oh, I don't like ISKCON, or I'm leaving ISKCON. So how do we divide ISKCON from Prabhupada? What is Prabhupada and ISKCON? How are they separate?
Madhavananda Prabhu, he gave a nice example of the importance of an institution. He said, like Jagannath Puri, Lord Jagannath doesn't need an institution. But he said they have an institution in Jagannath Puri because that facilitates the management of the temple, the distributed prasadam, putting on the festivals. It facilitates that. That's a very important part of Jagannath's pastimes. So the management, I think sometimes like the management is like our bones, the bones of our body. If we didn't have bones, we would just be a little blob on the floor. But the management is an extremely important structure that keeps our society organized and moving forward and ensuring that we're following Prabhupada's direction. So that governing body, that skeletal structure, is extremely important. And our sadhana and our spiritual life, that's actually the life force within that. And also, as much as the managers are also cultivating that spiritual life force, then that whole body has such a great dynamic. So, sometimes I see two devotees are frustrated with ISKCON. But is it that ISKCON is frustrating, or is it that Krishna's put me in some situation? Maybe he wants me to develop some humility and tolerance. Maybe he wants me, instead of complaining, to try to find some small thing I can proactively do to make Prabhupada's moment better. Because complaining does not help. Complaining doesn't help anything. Complaining doesn't help. So I think we all have to see that within ourselves. ISKCON is Srila Prabhupada's instant. Go to Uttaldanga. Go. You have to go. You'll change your life. That was the birthplace of the International Society for Krishna Consciousness. It was the vision of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. It was the part of the vision of Bhaktivinoda Thakur. 1977, I went on the balcony, Bhaktivinoda Thakur's home across the Geelong. You couldn't see anything but jungle. Then over the years, you could start to see the spire of the samadhi, and now you can see the TOVP. That was his vision. That was a part of his vision. So this ISKCON, despite the faults, despite the difficulties, that's Srila Prabhupada's vision. And our duty is to somehow find ways to work together to make it function as best as we can. There's always going to be problems. There's always going to be differences of opinion. But what can we do as individuals to make a better ISKCON for Srila Prabhupada? To answer the question. So I think I should end here so devotees can go for devotee prasadam, otherwise they will be in line with everyone. Thank you for your attention. Hare Krishna.
Jai.
Vaishnava Sangha Ki Jai.